Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today we're talking to Low Strife. Low Strife is just a fantastic trader. He really specializes in scalping. He's been around for several years, and he's a full-time crypto trader. He taught himself how to do this, and he's just someone I really respect. And I'll let him tell you his own story, but this is one that you want to stick around for. If you like the show, hope that you'll give us a rating or even review us on iTunes. That really helps. Subscribe on YouTube, and best of all, share the show with your friends so that we can have other people that get to know the show and start listening and watching and all that fun stuff. We really appreciate that. This episode is brought to you by Delta. Delta is just such a fantastic way to track your cryptocurrency portfolio. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to check it out for free. You can use all the basic features of Delta for no cost at all, including the exchange sync up to a certain number of exchanges. I manage 3 portfolios through Delta, and it's fantastic. Your Bitcoin, your ICOs, really anything that you want to track, Delta's got it. They already sync with so many exchanges and do so much right. It's available on every platform. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta, and thanks for Delta being a LedgerStatus partner. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today we've got Low Strife on the show. He is a trader that I respect a great deal, and he has strategies of his own that he's been utilizing for many years in the crypto markets. I'll let him tell you more about that, but welcome, Low Strife.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, no, it's been a while. I don't, come on voice too often, but I'm glad to, share, at least try to share some knowledge that I have.
Yeah, man. So you, I have my ideas of where your specialties lie, but you're primarily a Bitcoin trader. But do you have a particular trading strategy that you would say in terms of how you classify yourself?
I'd probably say scalper or market maker at the end of the day. I mean, those terms are kind of subjective. It depends mm-hmm. on, how you want to. There's, I've heard someone say like, oh, I'm scalping the 30 minute, but I'm like, that doesn't really, quantify what I do. But could do super low time frame stuff like that. Like I'm usually on the 1 minute for small stuff like that. But then I occasionally, like maybe once every few months, I'll play a bigger daily move or something like that. If the market tanks down to a level that I'm interested in, then I'll apply a totally different strategy and just average into a daily position and hold that for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days.
Okay, so for you, a long-term position is up to a week or so.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So you're primarily trading on margin accounts through either futures or on swaps or some sort of margin trading?
Yeah, I'm on a couple different sites. That's a tricky question to answer, though. I mean, there have been so many different exchanges throughout, the last 5 years that I've been in this space. I mean, I started out on BTCe way, in 2013. So I try to stay knowledgeable about, as many exchanges as possible, because I find them most interesting, especially the advent and the rise of the DAXs now. But it's really a nice thing to see how the whole space has evolved into like what it is today. Because back in 2014 and 2015, we didn't really have, like what you said, all these futures and leveraged platforms. Bitfinex was really right. The only one. And now the amount of order flow that's going through those things is crazy now.
It really is. So you've been in since 2014 or so?
2013. I sort of was, just like participating in reading back then, but I didn't really like come into chat rooms or like even really make a trading account probably till like the beginning of 2014.
Okay. So early 2014, you were another guest whose introduction was through the height of the bear market, the prior bear market. Were you initially in Bitcoin, or did you learn about things through other coins? We've had a lot of people that got introduced to crypto through Doge. You don't strike me as that type.
No, not really. I've traded alts here and there. I'd say probably 10 or 15% of the trades I've done are through altcoins. So like I've traded Dogecoin actually through its very first bubble at the start of 2014. Darkcoin, back when it was known as that, before it got rebranded to Dash, and then, you know, a whole bunch of other ones, including Ethereum. But I actually got initially interested in Litecoin. That was the first crypto that I ever bought. Well, technically, I bought Bitcoin, but I immediately converted that to Litecoin.
Nice.
So that was back in 2013, April. But I never really wanted to buy and hold a lot of those alts. Bitcoin was always like the home currency that I preferred to use, and that sort of stuck, you know, even through today.
Yeah. How did you get introduced in the first place to understand crypto?
A forum. Well, I've kind of probably heard about it probably back to 2011, just by reading tech articles and stuff like that. I knew I was aware of it going back that far, but I had, you know, no history of anything before then. But before in 2013, probably it was from the MISC. I think it's this forum that was like a general off-topic forum. And there was a thread on there, and that sort of just brought me in, like, into the space and gave me a motivation to actually buy and get involved instead of just being aware of it. And that sort of started the dive down the rabbit hole.
Nice. Were you a trader before that, or did you learn to trade as part of your interest?
I had never even executed a trade. I didn't have any, like, retirement funds or anything like that. So I was completely foreign to that whole aspect of it. The initial first trades I ever took was just like, I knew that the narrative that I've heard from a lot of people was that trading is bad, that you can, you know, pretty easily lose a lot of your money. So like, that's what I commonly saw on Reddit at the time. So just do that. Don't worry about it. But, I thought that I could trade quote unquote the altcoin pairs. So I started trading like Litecoin, Bitcoin that you were looking at a second ago. And just trying to make my Bitcoin balance go up that way. So that was kind of like my cheat way out. And if I was able to make myself get more Bitcoin, then that worked out pretty well. And I just sort of started off doing that, just slowly, you know, even a couple bucks here at a time, and then just slowly progressing over the years. So I never really traded dollar pairs until probably a year, I'd say, like 8 months to a year.
When you were educating yourself, obviously there was a transition period here, going from knowing nothing at all about trading to saying today you're mostly a scalper, or you're providing market making services, filling the books. How did you make that transition? Did you try to learn through traditional market books, or did you stare at order flow, or what was your process for getting to where you are today?
Yeah, I'd actually say it was the latter. I was just fascinated at looking at Bitcoin Wisdom at the time, because that was pretty much the only chart that showed you the order book. And I remember the first distinct memory I have was actually the Silk Road flash crash, like September or October of 2013, something like that, when the Silk Road got taken down by the government. The price of Bitcoin over the course of 2 hours just tanked, just a complete flash crash for a couple hours. It lost like 40% of its value. And I was just fascinated looking at the order books and just watching the sells. And that kind of was the first primer to when, maybe a month or two later, I don't remember exactly when, but somewhere around then, I started trading the altcoin pair to try to increase my Bitcoin balance. And yeah, it was just order flow. Like, I'd buy into a big wall and then sell it 1 or 2% higher and just capture that difference.
Nice. And you've always since then focused on those smaller moves and going in for the quick kills versus being a position trader. Do you maintain a spot balance depending on your macro view, or do you try to even get back to cash or hedge your way so that you're essentially on a cash basis?
Well, yes, I do. Like, I trade to accumulate more Bitcoin, and then I sell that Bitcoin to cash, you know, either when it was necessary or when I think the market is favorable. But I think for the most part, you could say that I trade to just to accumulate that Bitcoin position. It isn't really, I don't think about the dollars too much, because obviously, you know, you have to pay your bills in dollars or euros or wherever you live. For me, it was just mentally easier to try to accumulate more Bitcoin. Just the mentality of that type of trading just worked out for me personally a lot better. And I think that the mentality game for what may work for me might not work for everybody. And actually, I'm pretty sure it doesn't work for everybody. Because I certainly can't trade like some of the position traders. It's really rare for me to take a big position or any kind of long-term position, even if it's only for a week. I don't really count holding spot Bitcoin, like in cold storage, for instance, as a quote-unquote position per se. Mm-hmm. It's just you sort of just own it, and that's your thing. And then I choose when or when I shouldn't sell it, based on, yeah, I suppose the longer macro, you know, outlook of the market and how I feel about the market.
Yeah. So how did you manage that in the run-up of 2017? So obviously we were well above your entry prices for that cold storage. At what point, I know you were very aware of the fact that we were bubbling, and one of the things that some people tend to do is if they're aware, they tend to get out too fast and miss a lot of the run. So were you actively worried about the state of the market, you know, in say the 3,000 to 5,000 range, or 10,000, or how did you manage that process of, hey, it's time to take some, put it on the sidelines, and wait for the next round?
Yeah, it was actually, you nailed the range. It was at 3,000 to 5,000 range. So I think I was a little bit early in the scheme of things. I just linked you to a chart that was sort of describing that. 4,000 was pretty much my, oh, that's good. I think I'll sell a pretty good chunk right here. I had been scaling out for a pretty good amount of time before that, you know, selling into strength, selling a little bit here, selling a little bit there. But 4,000 was kind of like, okay, it's time to cash out and switch from holding Bitcoin for months or, you know, even a year or two, as I had been before that point, to selling it, to aggressively selling it, like within less than a month or maybe even a week after I make it. I just remember one of the big warning signs I got, for me personally at least, is just the random Uber driver that I had called one day. We started talking about ICOs, and he kind of came across as a marketer type person, somebody who involved with maybe Amway or some other marketing pyramid company. I can't remember what they're specifically called for some reason, but he like struck me as that type of guy.
Marketing.
Yeah, I suppose. But he struck me as one of those guys, and getting involved with all these ICO projects that he was mentioning, I'm just like, ooh, okay, we're getting warm here. And that was around the 3,000 to 5,000 mark. I think it was late August, early September of 2017. And then, just like you said, end up getting out too early. But I don't think I can, you know, can't really complain about profit. So it sort of is what it is. And either way, I'm totally happy with how I played the whole market overall. I think I'm so happy that it even happened in the first place. I mean, there was a long period of time where, you know, a lot of the sentiment in 2014, 2015, and even 2016 was that, is this going to happen? Or is it, you know, nobody could imagine another bubble.
When you say that you were selling off, like, you were still participating in the market, but it was even more aggressive in terms of your nightly or weekly or whatever reduction of that exposure, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I before that point, you know, back in maybe, let's use 2016 as an example, I would maybe sell every 3 or 4 months and, like, you know, 10 or 20% of my holdings, just to cover the next, you know, little while, buff up my cash reserves so that I have, you know, money to pay bills and stuff like that, since this is my full-time job. But once we got into that 4,000 territory, which was what that chart is about. That was kind of like my mental target. That's sort of above that when I switch. I'm like, okay, all right, it's getting a little too crazy for me. And that was pretty much, I think I got rid of most of my stuff at about 4,000 of what I was holding at the time. But then obviously, you know, amazing trading opportunities throughout the bubble. So I continued to, you know, you scalp and make money, but
yeah.
But, you know, that was sort of like the mental area that I was interested in for the spot positions that I would hold. Beyond that, I was selling them pretty quickly.
Yeah, your positioning here for saying this is my target is cracking me up, because that was essentially where my primary market entries were happening. And I can totally see your side of this, but it's a great testament to this idea that, you know, where you have a seller, you've got a buyer, and there's somebody on the other end of that. Both to be right in some way.
Yeah, I think I certainly was too early. I cannot even contest the fact that to be getting out too early, and that just really shows a testament to how crazy the growth was in this, because it was just the amount of media attention and just general talking, even among friends that I have that, you know, would otherwise never have been involved in markets. They're starting to talk about it. They're saying everybody at work is talking about it at the time. And it was crazy. So yeah. At any given price, there's buyers and sellers. So I just happened to be a seller at 4,000.
Well, and when you look at this, you know, how this played out, you weren't wrong about it being a good target, right? So we get into that 3,000. I think we got up to 4,500 before we really spiked down to 3,000 again. But we had, at these levels that you described, we had huge, you know, 50% sell-offs that at the time were pretty scary.
Yeah.
So I assume that was that, based on my knowledge of you from seeing some of your chat activity, it seemed like that those are the types of times where you were getting pretty interested and probably going in ready to catch a knife, huh?
Yeah, those actually were a couple of the times. Those corrections were certainly times where I was interested in using the cash reserves that I had and entering those daily positions. I remember there was, I think at that 3,000 level, I think I purchased Ethereum just because I liked the chart better. I just liked the structures and everything about it a little bit better than buying Bitcoin. And I think I purchased Litecoin on another one of the dips. But yeah, that's when I used the cash reserves that I had from selling to enter back in. And not really, I didn't have crazy targets for that. I think if I had purchased at 3,200, 3,100, give or take, equivalent for Bitcoin, so that would have been like 140, I think, for Ethereum. My target was like a 30 or 40% bounce for the cash. And then that cash would be out and back into my savings. So it wasn't necessarily it was strictly more of a trade per se than trying to reinvest that money that I'd sold back into the market, because at least for me personally, the way I've always structured it is, you know, when you cash out like that, especially if it's, you know, for life expenses, you know, it's best to set it aside and not, you know, always be continually trying to keep adding and adding and adding. I've always been a very risk off person in that regard. I've never been one to want to take like these huge, like, okay, I'm all in now. I've got enough money for the next 2 months, but everything else is going for this. I've never been that type of person.
Yeah. As a rule of thumb, say like in a, when you're starting to scale back into the market, you know, obviously at this point we're whatever, 70% off the highs, whether you've scaled in now or not, once you start scaling in, do you have rules of thumb for how you do that and at, you know, what percentage you want to keep on the sidelines versus trying to call a bottom and say, okay, I'm going in with, you know, 50% or 70% of my capital now?
It's a lot more feeling. I have just like this gut feeling. It's really tough to describe, but it's just this gut feeling of whether or not I'm like, okay, I do want to take this or I don't want to take this position. It's really just an intuition or a feeling I have about the market, whether or not I'm interested in this price or whether or not I'm not interested in the price. But then typically, at least for the spot positions on a daily chart, which is usually what I looked at in that regard, I would buy a range. like from the range of 7,000 to 6,000 last February. Well, 7,500 to 6,000 was sort of the range that I was buying. And I think my average ended up at 6,800. I have a published chart somewhere that I sort of notarized and dictated that trade. But yeah,
and listeners should know that you're a really good follow on TradingView if people are into TradingView, because you're pretty timely with how you're doing your analysis on some of these mid-time frames.
Yeah, I really try to. I wanted to publish a chart. Nope, gotta wait. And then the next time I get an issue to publish a chart, I wait again. And I always have to. I always force myself to wait because that's one thing I've learned, at least about myself. And trading is very much a path of self-discovery because you learn yourself and how you react to these situations. I've always found that I'm quite early, either on the upside or the downside. And on the upside, you saw, getting out of the market a little bit early. So I've always had to, pull back and wait, even longer. And I think timing, picking your levels is important, but timing can also be like really important as well, because a lot of the time it the market will continue going. And I feel like the amount of time that it takes for a move to happen is important as well, in addition to the levels at which it's hitting. And that applies both on the 1 minute and the 1 week.
Yeah. I mean, I know for myself, like there's been several times where I've been right on like the swing trade side of things, but because of the structure of my trade, I actually ended up wrong, like whether it was over leveraged for the position that I had the idea on and the market over exaggerated beyond what I expected. So like I'm thinking of this February move as a good example. Like I was ready to catch that, and on spot it was fine because I was putting more in on a daily chart. It looks pretty good. Because I think I bought some on this move under 7,000, like maybe 6,700. But like if somebody went in on margin on that same thing, like they could have gotten liquidated below 6,000 if they were using too high of leverage on a move like that intraday. So when you're trading on a 1 minute and you're looking for those same types of feelings and trying to decide when the right time is to jump in is or is not, is there anything you're doing to approach that? Like, are you paying attention mostly to candle structure, or what other type of stuff are you taking into account?
Yeah, I think candle structure and horizontal levels are kind of the most, the two things I watch the most, I'd say. And kind of like a momentum of a move. Because a lot of the times I feel like you get an impulse, like if a market breaks a range and it starts trending to the upside or downside, you'll get multiple impulse waves throughout that. And I personally like trading against the trend. So if it's the market's rallying, I'll be trying to catch a top. I'll have orders significantly higher than the price is going to want to go to. And I'll be trying to catch a retracement. Or if it's dumping, I'll be trying to catch a retracement back to the upside. And then just play OTE ranges as the market consolidates at that new level. Like as it goes to retest, I'll be trying to get into an OTE trade some of the times.
Can you describe OTE trades for listeners?
Yeah, so it's optimal trade entry is what it's short for, the acronym. And then if you were to take your Fib tool and draw the Fibonacci retracements, the OTE range is when you're from a 61.8% through a 76.8%, I think.
Okay.
Range of a local high to a local low. So it's sort of like where it comes back and retests. Like when you're looking here at this chart here with the bottom at 6,000 and the high at 11,700 from the February to March move, mm-hmm. that pullback to 6,500 actually goes beyond OTE. OTE, I think, was at like 7,200, 7,300, I think. Was that kind of OTE range, I think, was where the first stab where your cursor is over right now.
Yeah, and I apologize to people watching by video. My screen is basically frozen, so I can't navigate as well as I would like.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, that's a little unfortunate. Well, and if you're listening to audio, yeah, it's it is that sort of OT retracement where it gets like 3/4 of the way back to where it previously was. And I like playing a consolidating market as the market oscillates back and forth between a range.
So you'd like to trade that consolidation pattern itself?
Yeah, when it's pretty volatile and things are moving pretty quickly, yeah, I like to do that. I'd say that's probably one of my more common things I like to do. And then a couple other times, you know, sometimes I just like to try to catch a knife. I've never been able to explain it, but for some reason I'm just good at it. I don't know why. It just ends up working out that, you know, either I get lucky and get a wick fill from the last minute market order, or I just don't get filled at all. A lot of the time I don't get filled because I'm very conservative with those type of trades and stuff like that. And a lot of the time when trying to do that, it's better to be not filled at all. Because with the BART symptoms of the market of the last, you know, 4 months, you know, all the moves happen at once and it just goes crazy for 15 minutes and then it's sideways after that.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful.
How have you managed to adjust your strategy for, I don't know, do you think it's new algorithms? I mean, you seem to be a close tape watcher. So you want to give your theories on what's happening with these types of moves and how you're playing them?
Oof. The market has changed a lot since 2014 and 2015. I would say, I think you saying algorithms being a part of it, I think that is a pretty good chunk of it. The liquidity providers, not talking about myself, I'm talking about automated strategies, people who run market making box or proprietary
you make them almost as many trades as a bot. You've given me
not
a
close.
I've seen you put out a number, but it was some insane number of trades that you did throughout the year. Do you remember that off the top of your head?
It's in the thousands, yeah.
Yeah.
So when 2017.
Yeah, so when people are listening, like when they're talking about, or when they're trying to understand the level of detail that you're paying attention to the market, I mean, thousands of trades in a year is a lot. It's tens of trades per day.
Yeah, there have been days that I've hit 50 individual enter and close trades in a single day.
Wow.
But back to what you're saying about the market, where the algorithms, I think that, yes, they have gotten more sophisticated. Both the old participants have gotten better and there are new participants in the space. I think a part of it is that exchanges themselves have gotten faster. Stop orders have become more prevalent. And especially now in the post, quote unquote, post bubble, lack of volatility and lack of volume, there's a whole bunch of people who will get, you know, positions will accumulate over a day or two, in my opinion, and then everybody has their stop at a similar level. And then once that gets run, you know, it's, you know, five minutes for all the stops to run, you know, one after another. And because there's not much volatility otherwise, not much natural growth or contraction, that there's not too much, like, extra, you know, push of the market, so it just tends to go sideways as the market making algorithms regain control and sort of like consolidate the market sideways again. Where back in, let's say, December and January, there was people buying and selling left and right, creating lots of order flow, which gave tons of trading opportunities and created a lot of volatility. And back in 2015, I think that day traders made up a larger portion of the market. So it was a little bit more liquid.
In 2014, 15.
Yeah, that's right. Because back then, China was a big deal. And there was there were a lot of, for lack of a better word, gamblers. But a lot of people who were trading out of Asia, back when China was relevant in the market before the PBOC clamped down in late 2016 and removed them from the market. But they drove price a lot back then, and they were very... They did a lot of volume and they did a lot of trading. So trading back then was more, was a little bit easier in my opinion, but also a lot more oriented and just more volatile because of them trading. But nowadays it was, we had a lot of our volatility from just, you know, a massive amount of growth and contraction in the market. But now there's just so much liquidity everywhere that, you know, prices are relatively stable and liquid compared to, you know, years past.
I'd like to take a break to thank Delta for being a partner of Ledger Status. Delta is the premier way to track your portfolio, Bitcoin, Ethereum, ICOs, any token you've got, they can track it. All your transactions, whether you want to track everything automatically from a wallet or an exchange, they can do that for you. Delta is hitting milestone after milestone, and they've got all sorts of really fascinating releases and news coming up. You do not want to miss it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to learn about everything they're doing. If you've never tried Delta, that's the first step. It's easier than you think to transition if you're using something else for your portfolio management. I encourage you to try Delta today. It's all I use to manage my own portfolio, and I manage three portfolios. I manage my primary one, I manage the 100X Trading Challenge portfolio, and I even manage a portfolio for my kids. I do it all right there in Delta. I learn new things about Delta all the time that are really amazing. Just the other day, I realized that I could go in and I could set default currencies so that if I want to track my entire portfolio in Bitcoin, the dollar, Ethereum, or whatever, I can do that and I can know what my entire portfolio worth is worth in a particular currency. And that's any fiat currency as well. And I just love little stuff like that. Their attention to detail is fantastic. The app is beautiful and they're always working on new and interesting stuff. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to learn more. And thanks so much to Delta for being a partner of our show. Have you noticed a big difference in the efficiency of the market in the sense of, like, I think of Forex. I don't know if you've ever played other markets since then. A lot of people that lived through the last bear market went off and explored others. But do you think that this market is getting more efficient in terms of doing things like running stops or ruining a pattern or, you know, that type of stuff that tends to happen in Forex or equities and things like that?
I think it's my opinion. I may or may not be wrong. This is just how I personally think of it. But I think the nature of stop running per se is a symptom of lack of volatility. When a market is, you know, consolidating and there's not a super strong trend, it's trying to find where it wants to go. So you'll get those little stop runs that might fake out quite often. And that's, you know, people blame that to chop or stupid bots or whatever. But I think that's, at least in my opinion, a sign of just, you know, indecision and just, you know, chop back and forth.
Yeah. But are you a pattern trader, or do you mostly just pay attention to the order flow and candle structure?
Yeah, I don't really do patterns. I know everybody was talking about the inverted head and shoulders that actually did resolve. I don't particularly like the pattern. I don't do that many patterns, no. I'd say primarily order flow and like candle structure and horizontal support and resistance, so order blocks as well.
Yeah, so when you see big moves like this, do you want to give an example of how you may approach your own trading strategy? Because if you're on, I'm on a 4-hour chart right now, but, like, you know, if we have a big move like we did here and we did the same thing in April and we do the same thing going down, are you a believer that we're going to fill gaps and we're going to find our way back to those important horizontal levels? And if so, how do you blend a short-term strategy where you might be looking at a 1-minute chart with a general idea that you feel like here's our midterm bias?
Well, then there's two points I want to hit on there. One is refilling the quote-unquote gaps, and then the second is blending 1 minute versus 1 day, for instance. Refilling and retesting the gaps, since crypto is 24/7, we don't have gaps like the normal equity or forex markets do, where, you know, they close over the weekend, basically. But like what we just saw from 6850 to 7500, like we did today, we're breaking out here a little bit.
We are
pushing up from 7550. But, like when we did this gigantic move a couple days ago, that you could technically call that a gap because it just blew through the liquidity level super quickly. Mm-hmm. But I'm not as strong of a believer of retesting stuff like that as much as I would be if I traded equities a lot, where gaps can and can't be more or less important. I don't really have a super strong opinion on that, though. Coming back and retesting, I've always found that markets like to, when there's a strong trend, they don't give you a chance to come back and retest. When there's a properly strong trend, you're not going to get that good entry where you want to buy in. The strongest trends come from people market buying because they never got filled. So that's how I personally look at that. And then the second part is the daily versus the 1 minute. It's two different, totally different mindsets. I don't really think about either trade while I'm taking them. Not really. One can't really influence the other. Like I could be buying spot, but then not interested in trading the order flow whatsoever, or wanting to sell, or they're two totally different things with two totally different goals in mind.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just terrorizing you right now because we're staring at a $200 candle, and this is your bread and butter type of move. If you're like simultaneously manually hitting orders on one side of this call and talking to me on the other, I understand. I don't think listeners would mind.
I wanted to buy, but I was too late because I was too busy thinking about my point that I wanted to make, and I would have missed it. So. Yeah. That's a thing that I had to learn a lot over the years as well, is that sometimes the best trade is no trade as well. Obviously, there was a trade here about 5 minutes ago, but sometimes, 99% of the time I'm flat. And a lot of the time, at least for me personally, the best trade is just no trade at all. And not to worry about it. It helps me disconnect. I don't have to be worrying about, what my position is doing, what the market is doing while I'm going on a hike or going out to the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's, for me at least, a nice disconnect to treating the market like that.
Does that also help you as a full-time trader to be able to step away and just not care what the market's doing and understanding the idea that there's something on the other end?
That took me probably 2 years.
2 years. Yeah, so for 2 years, just freaked out about every moment of the market.
Well, a lot of it was intrinsic motivation as well. Like, you want to just to trade, because I had a love for it initially. And then it sort of has been morphing a little bit more into a job, per se. But even still, like, I'd be wanting to trade all the time, like we did back in December and January, where there was just 24/7 nonstop action. If you're at the desk, you're going to have something within an hour. That is nice, but that gets grueling at the end of the time too, when you're saying, no, I'm busy working, to, people wanting to hang out, or you can't go to XYZ because of the market. So I think it did take a while to learn when to and when not to pay attention. And when I try to go out, I totally disconnect from the market. I don't trade on my phone, or
You're an avid no phone trader, from my understanding.
Because I don't personally trade well on it, because I've done it in the past. I could say 2 out of 3 times probably didn't end well. It just isn't where my edge is. I found where my edge is, and I've just maximized that as much as possible. So that's what I can encourage anybody who would be listening, is to find what your edge is. Your edge could be doing what I'd be doing, could be hedging strategies, could be, playing all these different complex things. It could be position trading or whatever. But if you find something that you're particularly apt at, just go in on that and go hard, because there is no right way, quote unquote, in the market. There's certain, things you can do, like risk management or whatever, that's why some poker players have a lot of success, is because they have good bankroll management, risk management. But just find what you're good at. And if you find something that works, just go for it.
With your strategy, if you have you're full-time and you're paying yourself some form of salary, I assume, How do you deal with managing what you do with the idea of a cold streak? Do you have other stuff that you're doing so that you're able to have more passive income? Like you mentioned, market making, for instance. Like, are you when you say you make markets, is that manual market making of just playing both sides of the book in these small ranges, or how are you? You know, how are you just addressing doing this full time? More broadly, I guess.
Well, to the market making, I use that term loosely. I'm not running like a bot with thousands of orders like some people do. I am nowhere near intelligent enough to program that. And that's not where my experience lies. I'm very much like the old hit trader back in the 80s, I suppose, in the 80s and 90s. Doing that kind of stuff, you know, just playing the order flow and playing against other people. I think that's where my edge is personally.
Okay. But for people that are listening, there's a great documentary called Floored, which highlights the psychology and the struggles that pit traders went through. But it's fascinating to see what that was all about. And if you've never understood the idea of what a pit trader was, or, you know, someone manually playing both sides of the market inside a trading floor, it's great.
Yeah, I cannot highly recommend that enough either. It was a great little insight. And I didn't watch it probably for 2 years after I started trading, but once I did, I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense. But back to what you were saying earlier about the bankroll management or cold streak. I've always operated, since I went full-time, I've always had at least 6 months of living expenses in a savings account set aside, so I never have to worry about that mentality of like, oh, you got to make money, or oh, the market's got to do something because I got bills to pay. And I've been fortunate enough to not really have a long losing streak by nature of how frequently I trade. If you trade at the 4 hour, the daily, and you only execute 4 or 5 trades a month, then yeah, you could have a 6 month, you know, quote unquote bad streak. But for me personally, because of, you know, the frequency, you know, if you're trading more often, a week or two, maybe like if I go on tilt and just get out of sync and just, you know, take a week off, restructure yourself and then come back with a clean head, that usually has worked for me in the past.
How are you managing risk on lower time frames? Are you, do you feel a need to either use a large percentage of your stack on a single trade, or do you feel a need to use higher leverage because it's low time frame? How do you approach risk management on a trade?
I've actually found my strategy has continually evolved over the years. But there's a point where the sort of balance between capital preservation and the desire to take risk, for some reason, that psychology balances out for different people. Some people want to take more risk. Some people want to preserve capital more. There is no correct balance. But for me, I just know when I'm wrong, and I just got to get out. There's a certain point where either the level gets blown out that I was thinking of that would hold, or something crazy happens and it keeps going further than I wanted to, or the loss is just like, oh, that's just too much, and you have to stop out at some point. So that's sort of where that intuition comes in for me personally. It's really difficult to describe because I don't have a set, you know, a 1% or 2% stop loss where if the price goes 2% beyond my entry, I'm stopping out. I don't really have that. It's really heavily based on feeling and what I feel of the market.
Yeah, so you're not necessarily calculating an exact risk reward of here's your target, here's your stop, and let the market be the market. You're playing it by feel as the trade evolves.
Yeah, if you're trading the daily, you have the time for that. You have all the time in the world to actually do those calculations. But when you're trading the 1 minute, you have to be on the fly because, you know, I've had trades under a minute before where you're just in and out because, you know, some crazy whipsaw. And you're in and out, and you know, and that's it. That's all. That's all you need to do. So you don't really have time to, you know, do anything other than you take profit.
How do you do that with any degree of sanity, given the platforms that we have today?
You don't. I mean, back back in December, I mean, even before December, even GDAX was lagging. I mean, every exchange in the entire space is, you know, Binance, BitMEX, Bitfinex, GDAX, Poloniex, every single major exchange has had scaling issues just by nature of the crazy amount of growth that happens. So that's sort of just something that's inevitable that you just have to deal with it. And yeah, it's burned me in the past. And it would have been nice if the platform hadn't, you know, gone down server 404 error or whatever. So that's just the nature of the Wild West, I suppose, that even the best and most capitalized exchanges like GDAX had a solid, would you say, 3 months period where they were like really having trouble keeping up? I would say from like September until December, January-ish.
Yeah, pretty much through the holiday buyer season of, I felt like it was from Halloween through Christmas. It was just a massive user growth and error, like you said, errors on even the ones that were historically fairly reliable. Do you think in some ways the lack of infrastructure for crypto is part of your advantage so that you can take advantage of a more inefficient market? Or do you look forward to the days where these platforms are really good and you can always get your orders through and can always have the liquidity to have someone on the other side of the order?
Liquidity has gotten better everywhere pretty much over the last year. So that's just the nature of the price rising. But yeah, I've taken advantage of market inefficiencies in the past for sure. That was certainly a trade that really doesn't exist anymore. There were periods during the bubble when Litecoin was going crazy that I played some arbitrage where I could, you know, capture 5 or 7% because Coinbase was so expensive. But beyond that, not particularly for me personally. I personally would prefer better infrastructure because the opportunities that poor infrastructure once did provide probably vanished towards the start of this bubble, at least compared to what was truly available back in 2015, where you would have 20 seconds after a certain exchange moved to still enter a position on a different exchange and to catch the very beginning of a trend. But nowadays it's, you know, fraction of a second because high frequency traders have moved in, and, you know, such is the nature of the space.
Does losing those types of advantages, does it ever tempt you to take what you've learned in crypto and take some of these strategies and go and look at other markets or explore other areas that may be trending more heavily while Bitcoin is relatively flat? Or do you think that a lot of your experience is specific to the order flow that exists in crypto?
I think it's probably the latter. I mean, I think crypto is certainly a much less mature market than, you know, equities or Forex or whatever. Because the main thing that worries me, at least let me give you a good example, is Forex, is that some news drops that the 1 second I'm not paying attention or whatever, and you get this, you know, the gigantic Forex scandals in a fraction of a millisecond before you can even react. So that's the type of thing that has always scared me out of different markets, because crypto, it doesn't really have that, not to the degree and the speed at which other markets do. So it's still very much slower in that regard. So I've thought about it, but no, I haven't. I've done some daily trades on like oil or silver, for instance, in the past. But beyond that, no, not really. I've always felt at least my edge is in crypto. So I'm going to stick with it while the market is still good.
What about in terms of news events and how they affect these low time frames? Like, are you paying attention to news or fundamentals, or do you subscribe to any of these like talking squawk style services? Does that play a part in your trading philosophy?
I probably should subscribe to some of those squawk services, but I don't. I mean, I always just see people post the news in Telegram though, because I mean, crypto doesn't react in a fraction of a millisecond. Usually it's been getting faster and faster, of course, but you know, I think it's still is very much a human made market where there's, yes, there are algorithms, but it's still a very, very large number of human participants. And that's where my edge is. Eventually, one day, I probably will be weaseled out by high frequency traders. And that's where most of my market lies, is in those. But so that's sort of why I'm sticking with crypto for now, is because at least that's where I think my edge lies. I've had mixed success trading other instruments. So I'm just, before moving or gravitating or changing to those, I'm sticking with crypto for now. And plus, I like the market. It's, you know, a huge growth industry, so it's done well.
Do you have advice for other people looking to learn to trade in a similar style, looking to scalp markets? Maybe they don't feel comfortable in long-term positions and they want to learn from the way you've approached the market. What kind of tips would you give somebody if they were just getting started and trying to learn and, you know, don't want to lose it all in one go?
Well, I think that the whole mentality, the way I approach it, I don't think is for everybody.
Yeah, you have to have the time.
Well, yeah. First of all, you are a bitch to the market, for lack of a better word, because you have to be there when it happens. But on the flip side, you have the freedom that allows, is because you know, you don't have to be there for that one time a month that you have to get this right. You have a lot more freedom to take a week off if you want. As for tips and advice, obviously follow me on Twitter if I can self-plug. But
yeah, absolutely.
But I don't really talk too much about my actual trading on there, to be honest. I post my daily charts, but you know, on a minute-to-minute basis, it's gone too fast to be relevant to anybody. But for resources to learn and look at, I actually should check to see if this stuff is still available. But someone called ICT Trader, he made a series of videos. His name is Inner Circle Trader. And he made a series of videos a few years ago. I think he's made them behind a paywall now, I believe. I can't find it in the 5 seconds I'm looking at now. But he made a bunch of multi-hour long videos where he really went in depth into the theory of which he talks about his market, and how he looks at order blocks and how he looks at daily open and close ranges and stuff like that. And back when I watched it in 2014 and 2015, that was a very valuable resource to me. And I see a lot of the stuff he talked about residually in how I trade. He has a YouTube channel with a bunch of stuff on there. But I don't think specifically it was the market making series that I highly recommend. It doesn't tell you how to trade the 1 minute per se, but I think it puts you in the right mindset and like a general overview of the market that I could even apply to the 1 minute, and really shaped a lot of that. I will try to find it. So you could possibly put it in show notes or something, but I think it might be behind a paywall now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll find it and link it up. In general, if we were to look forward, would you be happier with a market that just constantly ranges, say between 6,000 and 9,000, or would you rather one that trends heavily and, you know, we have a move down to, I don't know, 1,000 or up to 30,000?
I'm a trader, so volatility is good. As long as I'm not on vacation, volatility is good. If I'm on vacation, please sideways. but no, I think. No, some of the best months for me trading wise were December and January. So obviously, you know, higher prices and more volatility are good for me. So yeah, sure, I'd welcome it, but I'm realistic at the same time too. So I'm not like expecting us to break out and go to 33K tomorrow. So I personally, I don't know, I kind of like a market that sort of breathes, where you have a month of heavy activity and then you have a month or two of consolidation, where you sort of don't have to be like to be every single day having this craziness. You sort of have 1 month on, 1 month off. We saw that a lot in 2016, and I actually quite like that.
Yeah. Well, cool.
So what about?
Go ahead.
So, what about you though for that type of thing? Because you're such a new entrant from the earlier last year. Like, does that affect like your desire for what kind of things you want to see in the market, in a ranging market, or do you want something else?
I'm okay with both. I mean, I'm bullish on Bitcoin from a fundamental perspective, but in terms of the assets that I trade, I do more alt trading than you. So I don't mind a ranging market if I can swing trade it on, you know, I'm more of this person that likes to spend a lot of time on the 4 hour and the 6 hour and stuff like that. On altcoins, I love the swing trade opportunities. If I just look at a chart and it's just this big wave, like Doge is the classic example of that, I'd yeah. trade the crap out of Doge. Like get me Doge below 30 sats and I'm super interested, right? Like anytime. Some of my more successful trades have been on similar assets. Like ZRX has had two nice runs, and you know, it's not the type of thing that I'm super interested in at this very moment, but when I can catch those swing trades, those consolidation patterns, that excites me for altcoins. But for Bitcoin, I'm all about the run. Give it to me, 30K, 40K, whatever. But I'm pretty patient for that though. So when I approach Bitcoin trading, I'm looking for either macro moves or a short-term move that just seems really obvious to me, unlike what we just saw. Like, so I apologize because through the tenure of this call, we've done the move and then we full retraced and then we probably won't do anything the rest of the day. So it was poorly timed for you because this was your bread and butter, but this is a perfect example of the type of thing where I just have no interest in it because we really didn't have too much of a tease on what direction this was going ahead of time in the timeframes that I'm personally super interested in. So this is, for me, the type of thing that just, you know, it affects the rest of my portfolio, but it doesn't really affect my decision making. So I've found my niche more in the mid-range swing trades, and also in probably the mid-caps is my favorite type of asset to trade from an altcoin perspective.
See, I've definitely traded, like I said, I did 10 or 15% of my trades in altcoins, and actually my favorite times to trade were pretty much trend finishing times where the volume and volatility was super high. So that's sort of when I became a participant in those markets. Mm. And there was just lots of opportunity and activity around those times. I never was interested in the, like, okay, this is coming back down to the bottom of the range. I should just start layering buys in and get a position in here because in a couple months it's probably going to come back up.
Oh yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. Interested me. Yeah, I don't like it when I'm not patient enough for that. So it's not necessarily that I want the entire trend. Like I don't want to just buy something that's wrecked and wait for it to pump some number of months in the future. I don't think I have the patience for that. But I think that similarly, there are setups throughout the trend. Like maybe the trend has begun, or one that I've recently enjoyed would be like divergence patterns on the retest of a recovery. So if I can find something where I can get divergence and it's retracing off of the first sign of market reversal, then that's the type of thing that would interest me. A lot of altcoins are looking like that right now, for instance.
That they are. The ratios are hurting pretty good on some of them. I see Ethereum has come down to actually an OTE entry. If you wanted to play that range here, it's 6,100.
Yeah,
or 0.0613, but I call the usually just at 6,100 and ignore the zeros. But
yeah,
old Judas, it's going to run the stops.
Yeah, man, it's Bitcoin's going nuts on us. So I'll let you get to it, and I appreciate you joining me today. It's great to learn from your experience. If people want to follow you, they should go to @LowStrife. You won't be covering these 5-minute moves like we're both glued to right now, but some of the macro stuff, I think you've done a really nice job of expressing on TradingView. I'll link that up for people to follow you there and get your broader commentary too. Thanks for joining me, man. You're one of the most talented scalp traders that I've ever seen. So it's great to have you on the show and get you to talk about your experience.
Yeah, man, thanks. I'm sad I can't, you know, give a perfect, you know, demonstration of a best ability here. But yeah, no, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, and we'll catch y'all next time. Monuments crumble.